All right. Hour number three, Oliver Maroney, big three. He said he's a couple minutes out to get stuck in traffic on the Selwood Bridge. Weird. Portland traffic.
That's what happens. These bridges. You're not stuck on a bridge right now. You're not living in Portland.
How bridge traffic is the worst? Selwood used to be even worse. Ross Island used to be
I think we have the most bridges. Don't we have the most bridges in a major city? Well, I don't consider metropolis. But I think as many bridges as any other city out there. I've never seen so many dang bridges. We got a big river parting the seas here.
Pittsburgh, right? No, they got a bunch.
I don't know. I'm asking that. I'm asking the question.
Well, I did too. I said Pittsburgh. Don't they have a lot of bridges?
How many bridges?
I just heard that.
I cross two. Sometimes three bridges just to get here.
Three. So you'd go interstate. Why three?
Three or two. Somewhere around there. Two.
It'd be two.
Sometimes. Well, it can be three. Sometimes if they close off I-5 and I got to go 405, wrap back around and then come up and under and go on the Ross Island Bridge. So sometimes it can be three.
All right. Well, Oliver Maroney will be here soon. And we'll talk a big announcement that they made in the Big Three plus NBA chatter. And then I want to get his thoughts on the cheating in baseball scandal and how it's tarnished sport. What are some things that in other sports they could do that could tarnish like what baseball is going through with the Astros and Red Sox? Spygate didn't tarnish the NFL, right? There's things that in basketball, what's the basketball equivalent? Like, there's nothing in basketball that you could really have. What is the most tamper-proof sport in, I guess, Teflon sport? Because baseball just seems like they make their own bed with the big off-the-field stories, be it steroids, gambling, and now stealing signs and using cameras to do it.
Well, baseball is a very slow game, and it's methodical, and there's a lot of time in that game. I mean, it's the only sport that doesn't have a clock. I mean, there's no time. You could just sit there. You could take a 10-hour game. You can take an hour and a half game. It just got us so much. There's strategy. I mean, when guys want to fight, they want to fight because they're bored. They have nothing to do. They have tons of pent-up energy.
But isn't it weird, though, that it affects the brand of the sport so much more, these controversies? Isn't that it has to do, like, with a little bit of the way they handle anything that comes down on them? It's like they don't know what to do. They're like, we're panicked. We don't know what to do. And whereas the NFL and NBA, to a lesser extent, they just kind of brush it under the rug and let it go, you know?
Yeah, I don't know if they let it go. This baseball's always kind of been around this because it's always been one-on-one games. It's pitcher versus batter. It's full of these one-on-one little tiny things from guys standing out there wiping down their arms and across their forehead to signals, and it's very much secret. Remember the hidden ball trick? You ever see hidden ball? I mean, remember the hidden ball? We're trying to fool guys all the time. The sport is based on trying to steal something. Stealing second!
Right.
Okay, no, I'm being a little facetious here, but let's be honest. I mean, it's full of, it breeds it.
This one, soccer is very tamper-proof. That FIFA scandal wasn't very good for soccer.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Yeah, that
remember that whole thing?
It's full of a lot of stuff.
Bribery kind of gets it all done.
Hey.
And that's what kind of runs these sports worlds. And
it all does kind of go around
money. He's here. Yeah.
You got caught on a bridge.
We have to wait for his mic to be turned on because our producer let him in.
No, there it is. It's on. He just got caught on a bridge here.
Caught on a bridge.
Oliver Maroney, Big Three. How you doing, man?
I'm doing good. How are you guys?
Good. Bridge.
Selwood.
Half hour.
No, not that bad. It was like 10 or 15 minutes delayed from what I expected it to be. It's just that, you know, there's merging traffic on that bridge. So you get these people who are, you know, Portland drivers.
It's all Subaru drivers.
Bad mergers.
Do you drive a Subaru? I've tried
No.
You drive a Prius?
Absolutely not. No, a Honda.
I was going to fire you just out of the studio if you drove either one of those.
No, absolutely not.
I was going to say you strike me as like a Mercedes guy.
I used to own a Mercedes.
Oh, did you?
I did own a BMW.
Attaboy.
Those are the two cars I like driving. But, you know, when you have kids, you have to get a Honda.
Practical dad.
Practical.
Dad move.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Car seats are loaded up in the back.
Did you get a pair of Nike Monarchs for Christmas?
Mm-hmm. Hey, I'm working in that direction. Here we go.
Everybody needs a grocery getter.
All right. You guys had an awesome announcement today with the Big Three. Follow him on Twitter, by the way. Omaroni Big Three. Ice Cube voicing it, and that seems like a perfect person to do it, is voice the Big Three announcement. What's going on with you guys? Because they're pretty big moves.
Yeah, so we're making quite a few changes. I mean, first and foremost, we're lowering the minimum age to 22.
That's cool. I thought that was the biggest one. Isn't
what is it,
it
right now? 40?
Yeah, I mean, the minimum age is 27. But, you know, it still prohibits guys. You know, a guy in the G League who, you know, may want to play in the summertime, play against guys that they grew up watching, grew up idolizing. That's the opportunity for them. You know, they can look at that, guys who play overseas at a high level competitively. I mean, the idea here is really to move the needle to say, hey, this is a competitive basketball league. This is, you know, this is our own sport. This is our own thing. So part of the announcement as well is that we're creating our own sport. You know, we're separating ourselves from everybody else and saying, hey, just like what, you know, similar to what UFC did.
Okay,
if you guys recall, it was extreme boxing at one point.
Yeah.
Now it's UFC. So we're doing kind of a similar thing there.
Have you gotten feedback from the NBA and what they like and dislike about what you guys have done so far? Or is it you still kind of just
It's a very separate thing, right?
Okay, so no real communication with each other at all?
Not really.
Like, no feedback?
I mean, we've had discussion back and forth. I have not been a part of those discussions, unfortunately. But to my knowledge, they were supportive of the league, but not to the extent of, you know, outwardly supporting it. So I think at this point, you know, you look at the announcement and kind of what it includes and entails, and really we're driving our own vehicle at this point.
Well, I think one of the things, big steps in credibility that you guys had was this past year when Joe Smith comes out and he sets the league on fire, and then he gets a workout in, was it
Joe Johnson?
Johnson. Yeah. Oh, not Joe Smith. Yeah. Joe Johnson gets a short deal with the 76ers, was it, right?
Was he 38? Is he 38 at the time? Or is he
with the Pistons, yeah.
Pistons.
38, 39.
Somewhere around there.
Yeah, he got a 10-day, or not a 10-day, training camp invite and was on the fringe of making the roster.
But it was like somebody was watching and going, hey, he's got some gas left in the tank.
Yeah.
And for the, like, when you have the new 22-year-olds like you're talking about, the measuring stick could be like, hey, we haven't seen this guy play against, you know, big body veterans before. Now, he may be a little bit beyond his age, or his body may have given up on him for an NBA career. But if you can go toe-to-toe with a guy like a Greg Oden or Joe Johnson, then you're kind of getting a little bit better evaluation of a guy as opposed to just going against G League guys.
Absolutely. I mean, we had execs all summer long come to our games. You know, David Griffin of the Pelicans, bunch of other guys, scouts, that would come and show up to games just to kind of get an idea of what's going on. There was interest from a lot of teams on a lot of different players. But, you know, you think about some of these players, they're older in their careers to the point where they had big contracts.
Mm-hmm.
So some of them aren't even looking to get back in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are, absolutely, but they're not willing to take that prove-it deal. They're willing to say, hey, give me a one-year deal if you're going to do it. You know, don't give me a non-guaranteed contract. I'm not going to go through that. So there's a lot of different scenarios with these older guys. And I think, you know, that's why scouts are at, you know, scouting and being a part of it.
Is there a little bit of a goal to have a development side? And is that part of it? Is it maybe have a sense, or maybe it's the exposure, not that the development is the exposure of a younger player?
Yeah. I mean, we do young three camps is what we call it. It's our version of just like youth basketball camps. We host them in every city we go to. It's free. Kids can show up. We give them jerseys and shirts and things like that. They get to compete. We have, you know, Ice Cube, other people come in and show up, talk to them, tell them, you know, most of the time these are very urban places, you know, inner city sort of situations where kids may not have the money, may not have the ability or capability to play on a club basketball team or AAU. So, you know, Cube, some players will come in and coach the kids, tell them, you know, what to do. Not just in basketball, but life in general. So I think that's the move youth-wise, mm-hmm. and they very much care about that. That's a big portion of what the league is about, is giving back to each city that we go to. And then you talk about, you know, lowering the age to 22. Now you have guys, hopefully, in college, you know, coming out of college, that, you know, maybe they don't feel like they're an NBA prospect yet. Hey, go play in the Big Three for a season and see if you can get a look. So that... You know, there's a lot of different combinations of things that go into play with this. But I think overall, you know, we wanted to make a statement and say, hey, we're a separate league. You know, this isn't, you know, yes, we're complimentary to the NBA in some extents, but I think overall this is our league, you know, and create that face, create that narrative towards it.
What is Bring the Fire?
Yeah, so the Bring the Fire rule is the one that everybody keeps texting me about, everybody keeps calling me about. So,
it sounds awesome.
So essentially
is
what
this
it
like
is...
like NBA jams, like when somebody is
heating up.
Yeah, there's a little bit of that going on. But the Bring the Fire rule is pretty simple. So let's say, you know, I'll use the Trailblazers as the example here. Let's say Lillard goes and drives to the rack and he gets fouled. Okay. Or he thinks he gets fouled. Let's put it that way. He thought he got fouled. The ref didn't call it. Well, the team would be able to challenge that call, and if the team challenged that call, Lillard would go against whoever he is guarding one-on-one in isolation for the ball.
Oh.
So that's the idea. And I think CJ McCollum last week said something about, you know, scrap the All-Star game. Let's do a one-on-one kind of deal. So that's the idea of it, is to have some more one-on-one isolation play and make games just a little bit more competitive and meaningful with that.
So the guy, the offensive player gets the ball and he's on offense one-on-one?
Yeah.
Okay. And how many of those challenges do you get?
1.5.
Because like Kobe would be like every single play.
Yeah. Challenge.
Be like, hey, challenge. Yeah. I want this. No. Hard.
So 1.5. One and a half.
Okay.
So you don't want big baby Glenn Davis using this challenge. It's pretty much you don't want him to get out there and be like, come on, no.
One-on-one with, yeah. I think anybody would take that. Yeah.
But if you had a guy with handles against a big baby Davis,
perfect,
crossing him over and watching him fall over would be hilarious.
There's the entertainment.
It would be a gif for ages.
Yeah. And we've had a few of those in regular games because it is 3-on-3. There's more isolation play. But now you just size it down to 1-on-1. And, you know, you have to think that this is going to make this more entertaining. I think anytime you have just two people on a floor going at it, even just for one point, it makes a real big difference in kind of the entertainment value and kind of what you're focusing on.
Oliver Maroney, he covers the Big Three. He's out on Twitter at @omaroney. Big Three actually works for the Big Three. Also, NBA, too. You've covered the NBA and college basketball for years. A guy, I saw your tweet storm last night about a former Oregon Duck that is shining in the NBA. I want to talk to you about Dylan Brooks and a question that we were talking about earlier. Baseball is kind of tarnished by their cheating scandal. What do you think it would be for basketball that would be a scandal on par with it? Oliver Maroney sticks around with us next on The Fan. All right, Oliver Maroney at @omaroney Big Three on the Twitter bots. All right, Dylan Brooks, man. When you were at Dime, you wrote an article about Dylan Brooks. I remember, where did I see you? You were with him. The Nike Hoop Summit.
Oh, yeah.
You were at, the Nike Hoop Summit with him at that time.
Yep.
And he has become kind of and so you wrote a profile on him.
Yeah.
What makes him tick. And then he's kind of becoming like not just a role player in Memphis anymore. He is kind of finding his skin and emerging with the Memphis Grizzlies.
Ooh, big word.
Emerging.
Great word.
Yeah, I mean, he's like their, I would say, second or third star along with that Jaren Jackson. And
John Morant.
John Morant.
Yeah. I mean, he has been wildly productive. I saw that a fan tweeted you, they're 12-0 and he scores 20.
I haven't fact-checked it, but like if that's true, like,
well, then that's...
Give him the ball.
He's the Draymond Green of the Memphis Grizzlies.
But you know, he is a guy that kind of has that Draymond quality where in college you're like, is he fast enough to play on the perimeter? Is he big enough and physical enough to play on the wing? You know, like you didn't quite know.
Yeah.
But he's got whatever it is between the ears, right?
Absolutely. And I think the thing that people underestimated, I mean, I got text messages from execs the day of draft and like the week leading up to it. They're just like, no, he's not a first-round grade. Like, it's just
not it.
Good luck, you know, like, whatever. I was like, why? And the thing that kept coming up was the size thing. Like, his arms are not very long. And I just thought to myself, like,
T-Rex,
you're telling me that the size is the biggest issue. Okay, well.
The size matters. I mean, that's
Oh, ew.
Let's
mark that.
Ding.
Sorry,
I just totally threw you for a loop.
No, it's fine. I'm good. No, but it's really funny to me that still is something that people look at and kind of value over skill set, value over whatever that player has in his DNA, that surprises me.
Well, do that in every sport, too.
Yeah. They do, but like basketball specifically. I mean, if you look at the way the game has changed, you can have three guards on the court at one time. You can have Draymond Green at center, and it's worked out like very well for the Warriors, very well for some of the other teams. I just think that in this day and age, you take the most talented guy and you utilize him in the best way possible.
Right.
And you use his skill set. And I think I'm taking a page out of Joe Judge's book here.
Mm-hmm.
In his press conference, I think he mentioned, you know, don't look at the deficiencies. Look at what they can do and then maximize that.
Absolutely.
And that's like the Patriot way. That's like, you know, and you look at the great teams and that's what they do really well. So it's just surprising to me that size was the biggest question mark coming into this thing, and that really doesn't have too much of an influence, in my opinion, on how well you transpose or move over to the NBA.
Well, Steph, CJ, I mean, those guys are perfect.
All undersized.
Right, right. Okay, we've been talking a lot. Astros, Red Sox, the brand of baseball kind of tainted right now. Is there anything in like basketball that you can equate this to? I mean, we get texts like Tim Donaghy and the ref scandal, but
probably it.
But there isn't really anything in basketball that we can kind of point to that is on the level of this cheating.
How would you cheat in basketball, or how would you even do that other than gambling on it? Well, you can't hide in basketball or cheat that way.
It's much more difficult in a fluid game.
Yeah.
Right? Like baseball is so stop and start that I think, you know.
No clock.
Yeah, you can kind of maneuver around and do things, and people go in and out of the dugout. And
right.
I think there's a lot more there than there is in other sports.
Could basketball be more about just personality, who they are on and off the court, looking how David Stern changed the way the dress code was and had to make all these different types of things? I think more basketball looks at it that way instead of just how the national perspective is, instead of actually trying to find a way to punish them because they could be cheating some way.
Yeah, I do think the official thing is a real thing, though.
Right.
It's been spoken about. I mean, even, you know, you see it in the playoffs coming around.
Don't
and
talk to me about the
about
2000 Western Conference Finals.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Yeah, but it just, it doesn't seem to really affect the NBA like it does baseball. But I think baseball, it's so interesting to me because baseball, out of all the sports, all you have to be is good at one thing. And it makes it work, right?
Right.
Am I wrong?
Well, explain that. What do you mean by it? So if I could throw 97 with a great curveball, I'm great. I'm great. I'd give 350 million.
Boom.
Yeah.
So I think there's ways that you can really manipulate the system if you're, you know, on PEDs or doing this or that. And all you have to focus on is one thing. Like basketball, you can't be bad defensively.
Right.
Like teams will not put you on the court if you're bad defensively. Now you can be okay defensively. You can have your struggles and they'll still put you in if you're great offensively, but you have to have other skill sets. But with baseball, it's like you can be a great hitter. All right, sign me up. Done.
Yeah.
We got you.
Yeah.
You'll have a career somewhere.
Exactly. So for me, it's hard.
Also,
because there's no other sport like it.
3 out of 10 in Major League Baseball's Hall of Fame. 3 out of 10 in the NBA, you're out of a job.
Exactly. That's also true.
Yeah.
Very, very true.
Sorry, baseball fans.
But here's the thing, though, is that like even with the referee scandal, like the Tim Donaghy thing, that was more of there was a bad actor and the NBA did what it needed to do to nip it in the bud and they got rid of the bad actor in this whole thing, right? The Astros and the Red Sox are doing this, and it's like baseball as a whole takes a hit. It's not just like the people that are in the wrong.
Yeah.
It's the league as a whole, which like in the NFL, Patriots with Spygate or Deflategate, the Patriots are the bad guy, right? The one person who doesn't. The NFL isn't the bad guy there. Major League Baseball, the league takes more heat
it's
than
true.
Anybody else. Which
it's really true.
I can't wrap my head around why that is. And I think it may just be like the way they've overreacted to things in the past.
It could be the way they overreacted to things as fast. Their Hall of Fame is completely different than every other sport. So I feel like they're way more particular in keeping their sport the way they want to keep it.
We have guys that don't vote Ken Griffey Jr. unanimous, guys, stuff like that, just because they feel like it's not proper. Nobody's ever done it.
It's almost like golf, right? To an extent, like the rules are very much a part of what it is, and they want to keep it that way. it's got this kind of old school mentality in that sense. And I think that may be part of it as well.
Yeah, there's a refusal to change in those sports, whereas the NFL and NBA, to more of an extent of, hey, we're trying.
Yeah.
We're trying these Absolutely. New things that
will help
our product.
Doesn't sports need villains, though? Yeah. I mean, don't you think that their NBA needs villains?
100%.
You got to have that, just like the Celtics were, and they hate it. And then LeBron, and there's a side that says LeBron could be a villain or anybody's a villain. You need that. I need that personality a little bit. NFL allows that to happen.
Yep.
They really allow it. Baseball does not want that at all. As much as you say the evil empire of the Yankees, but in basketball, who are the villains out there? I don't know about the way you feel it, because Portland is so average this year, beyond average. I don't know if I've sucked the air out of it. But I don't, I'm like, it's like LeBron and the Clippers. That's it. Maybe that's a Portland perspective because James it's just Harden. Not in there. Who's James a bad Harden. Guy? Who's scary?
Harden is definitely a bad guy.
Is he? He's averaging almost 40 points a game. That's incredible.
Everybody hates him.
Do they well, really? LeBron's great too, but people still hate him.
LeBron's the best true. Player in the league, and he's almost 100.
And I think this is it. Like, this text comes in, I'm more annoyed by flopping than the sign stealing. That text came in at 55305.
Yeah.
Like, flopping is the big issue in the NBA, but
you don't
that's
like a faker.
It's manipulating.
Like, and they
issue.
Really the haven't up. Addressed it.
Yeah. They
like,
haven't.
They've tried to come out and say stuff. Now, correct me if I'm wrong. The Astros and the Red Sox, as teams, move forward with that, correct? Or was it the MLB?
With the punishments?
With the punishments.
No, MLB came
MLB
down. With
did
the,
come
for
down.
The Astros. Yeah.
And then the
waiting.
Astros.
There was no self
they're waiting on
reporting
the Red Sox.
Of anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think in the NBA, you have the teams immediately on it.
Mm. They do rat themselves out a lot.
Hey, we own up to it. But even look at the Dallas Mavericks thing that happened with Mark Cuban and all that. That went away.
So there's more
really
backstabbers
quick.
In
but
the
what
NBA.
What did Mark Cuban do?
It's pretty much what it's. Yeah.
He came out like the next day, went on the jump with Rachel Nichols, and just owned up and like said everything that he needed to say. And everybody's like, all right, we're
hey,
good.
Hey, you got me.
Hey, he owned you up to me. It. We're good.
But it also, to mention is that NBA set something. They removed an owner.
Yeah.
Owners, and they understand. And look, say, if you can do that, we better own up real
and that's
quick.
And that's a dang good point right there.
Never removed an NFL owner.
Jerry Richardson,
kind of in a sense. Yeah. So it's along that same line.
Forced him to sell.
Have they
the
done
team?
It in baseball yet?
Marge Schott? Wasn't she forced to sell the team?
I thought she just died.
I thought they forced her out.
Like 18,000.
Oh, the Dodgers owner. What was the guy's name? McCord.
They forced him out. Didn't he just
Frank
sell?
McCord. No, they forced him to sell because of the fact that they were like, dude, you don't have enough money to run this team.
Why
did we sell?
Broke.
Why did we sell you this team in the first place?
That's
and he wanted to hang on to it, but I think that he was forced to do it because his wife was going to take over too because of their divorce. So it wasn't for a rules violation, though. It was because he's broke.
Yeah,
they should have. Yeah.
But you also notice the teams, too. Like, the MLB just doesn't seem to, I mean, maybe I'm crazy. They don't really seem to care that much about how many people show up or what happens.
Nope.
I mean, some of these teams, I look at Portland and the whole MLB to Portland thing. It's like, how has this not happened?
Incredible. Tampa has a team?
Yeah.
And you want to go to Canada? I know. It's infuriating.
That doesn't make any sense.
No.
We got the Portland Diamond Project working.
Miami doesn't care about baseball. What are we doing? They don't even care about football.
Hey, we're working on it. Working on it, all right? Oliver Maroney in studio. He's with the Big Three. We got to ask you, we have to get our Blazers questions in because, as Cam said,
do we really?
They're average. They're below average. But we must do it.
Yeah.
Let him go.
Next, here's Buck. All right, the text line has turned into a bunch of complaining about James Harden.
Yes.
Nobody, you said, Oliver, you said nobody likes him. That's not a pet peeve that you say it. It's like when we're done watching a team and someone in college football says, they haven't played anybody. But they've still played some guys. They played some teams. You say nobody likes James Harden. Is that really true?
I would tell you.
Give me a percentage.
Yeah, probably like 80%.
Even on his own team? 80%?
I don't know about his own team. I do know just like sports reporters in general, basketball reporters I've spoken with that have also said
really?
They dislike Really? The way he plays. Yeah, absolutely.
And as a person also to interview and talk to as
interview
a person?
That's a different story.
Okay, all right,
that's
all right.
A separate thing. He's generally been pretty nice. I mean, I've done a couple things with him. I know other people that have done stuff with him. He's totally cool.
All right.
But I know early on in his career, I know he got a bad rap for that sort of thing. He wasn't necessarily as caring about like what his perception was or image was or things like that. But I think nowadays, I mean, you know, social media, all this other stuff, you to be somewhat good with people or you're just going to get torn apart.
Yeah, it's going to be brutal
on
you.
Kevin Durant just sit on Twitter and get in fights all the time.
Even yesterday, you see the Brooklyn Kendrick Nets thing with Kevin Durant, and it was so nice to see that. And then I'm like, people are still like, oh, I wish he did that on Twitter, or oh, I wish he'd be
with
nicer
the kid. What did he do? I didn't see it. He did something with the kid, right?
All that happened, and this is incredible to me, and this is the impact of sports. Kevin Durant is sitting on the bench. It's during a Brooklyn Nets game. The kid is like four or five rows from the court, and he says, Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant, Kevin Durant, and he turns around and he smiles at him, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then the kid is freaking out. Oh my gosh, Kevin Durant, he smiled at me, blah, 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 blah. And that was it. But it's like that moment is worth so much to, I think, even Kevin Durant, PR-wise, everything. And it shows just the impact of sports.
You made a kid's day. Like, and that kid will never forget that.
Never.
Like, that is something he'll remember forever. That is really cool.
How many times do you think professional sports have you been around a guy where you take the first impression, you go, my gosh. Like, at any point in time, have you ever had that where it's that first initial impression of being around that person and you went, I know that guy. I just know. I either dislike him or I like him. Are you one of those when you're talking with those
absolutely.
Guys?
Absolutely. I mean, Dylan Brooks was one. CJ. Yeah. Absolutely. Before all of the other stuff, you know, MIP and everything else that he's done. Most improved player, by the way.
Not minor in possession.
Please. Let's calm down here.
Oliver's like, in college.
Now that, when he was 20, before that happened. Okay. Yep. Yeah.
But CJ, just incredible. And you hear stories about CJ, like in the draft and things like that. Just stand up, genuine, good person. And you hear it from everybody. Yeah. It's just like, you just know.
Yeah.
And Dylan, same thing. I mean, there's a lot of guys that I would say, but you can know pretty quickly. I mean, I'd say even like Myers Leonard.
Yeah.
Like you sit down with him, you talk to him, and you're like, how do so many people hate this man? Like, I don't understand.
No, exactly.
And you sit down with him, and it's just like, it's kind of sad because you're talking to this guy who's like genuinely cares about what he's trying to do and actually cares about what people think of him.
Sure.
Right.
And, you know, he was just very honest and open, answered any question, would go on about it. It was just, you get a sense of it really quick, though.
You know what this sucked about Myers Leonard, and this is why people had such a gripes about him, is because he was honest about his deficiencies, and, like, fans always complain, oh, why aren't they just more forthright? Well, it's because you get burnt like Myers Leonard did, where he was honest, this is what I need to work on, this is what I've been focusing on, this is what I think I can do. And then he'd go out on the floor and it would not change. Like his production didn't change. And it's like, okay, so you don't like him because he was honest and let you know exactly what it was. And it's all the stuff that everybody saw.
Yeah.
It just didn't change ever with him.
Well, and what's funny to me too is, let's say average Joe in accounting and you say, hey, what do you need to work on, Joe? And he says, well, I need to get my words per minute up in typing or something like that. Let's just... Right. Okay, great.
You've never had an office job. Words per minute.
I need to work on, whatever. Yeah. Let's, long story short, he wants to work on something. All right. And he tries to work on it. If he doesn't get better, can you imagine if people held him accountable to that?
Right.
That's the same thing as Myers Leonard. You can't expect a guy to change his entire game overnight. And you can't expect a guy to be like, hey, I'm working on these things. Just because I'm working on them doesn't mean I'm going to get like massively improved over the course of a season.
Yeah, but when you pay somebody $11.5 million,
and
that is the reason why. And that's not his fault.
That's not his fault at all.
He's not supposed to turn down money and do that. All right, here's my Blazer question for you. Is there an asset or assets on the Blazers right now you would move in this first part now that free agency could be hitting?
I've talked about
not free agency, but the trade deadline. I apologize.
Assets, I'd move.
Yeah, if you were in charge, you're Neil O'Shea right now.
Yeah.
Okay, you're the GM, bro. Okay, what change is the first change that you are thinking for this team has to happen?
How do we get Kevin Love here?
Really?
Yeah.
He's a K-Love guy.
I'm a K-Love guy. And not only that, you clearly can tell that he's on his way out. So you know that the other team is going to be willing to part ways. At least that's my impression. Obviously, I haven't spoken to the Cavs general manager. Right. I don't know the situation, but it sure seems like, from all accounts, that Kevin Love is on his way out.
Do you think he would want to be here?
Absolutely. Why wouldn't he?
Okay.
He said he wants to be on a contender. I think Portland is truly a contender when healthy and with the right pieces. I think if you looked at that situation and you said, okay, I'm in a terrible, well, first of all, Cleveland. Living in Cleveland is not great.
At $32 million a year?
You find a way to be happy.
Try to find a way.
Yeah.
But I think overall, you look at what Portland has to offer as opposed to the Cavs, and it's much better than his current situation. Mm-hmm. And if I'm a player who's been in a situation like that for a long enough period of time, I'm ready to say, okay, give me any team that has a shot at the playoffs, and I'm good. You're making a ton of money anyways. You're on the latter half of your career here. Take a look.
Does that mean you move Zach? Who are you moving want that? Is there a piece? Is it Anthony also? Is this a package? Is this a big package this done?
I don't think it takes much considering you have expiring contracts and considering you have a Cavaliers team that doesn't really have a direction.
Yeah.
You know, they've got some young pieces. They've got some good pieces in their backcourt. But, like, overall, they don't, to me, seem to have much of a direction. So that's a team where I look at and I say, okay, that's a bad move waiting to happen. Like, they're willing to make something that may not be ideal for their situation. So maybe it's a Kent Bazemore, a pick. Maybe it's a Whiteside, a pick. Maybe you throw in a Collins. Look, the problem I see with Collins, and if I'm Neil Olshey and you know Neil Olshey, this man doesn't trade his draft picks.
No, he's hyper loyal.
And he traded two draft picks to get Zach Collins in a draft where you had Donovan Mitchell and other players you could have taken.
You've got to bifurcate those two things.
Yes, I love it. but you look at that, and that's the tough part. I just don't know if Neil Olshey is willing to make moves.
Well,
because these are all his babies, his guys. And unfortunately, in the NBA, you have to trade your babies sometimes. That just that has to happen.
And I think if you can get away with it, I saw a trade proposal that that would never happen. It was Bazemore and CJ for Love and Dellavedova, and I was like, not going to happen. It will be an expiring deal.
Yep.
And then the hard part in why Collins may be forced to be in it is that there is no way that if you bring Kevin Love in 2 years, you can pay Zach Collins.
No way.
Yep.
There's no, because you've got three more years with Kevin Love.
But Zach Collins hasn't proved anything in the NBA that he is a star or at on the verge of anything.
I just don't know what his ceiling or potential is. I really don't. And yes, we can all talk about what he looked like in preseason or what he looked like last season.
Prove it.
At the end of the year. But like, it's very difficult to replicate that sort of production. And then also add on to that when you're that young and you're a big man. I just don't know. I don't know with Zach Collins. I'm not sold. I'm not trying to be rude.
No, I'm right with you, Oliver, on this. I'm more of I have to see it, prove it, do that. One game where you have a couple blocks and a couple stuff is not what we need to see that over a season.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if you see a three-way trade where a team really likes Zach Collins. Some GM is just enamored by this guy and wants to trade for him. Maybe it's similar to the Tyler Zeller or Cody Zellers or those sort of players of the world. There's a GM that's enamored by it and says, okay, I want to make a move for Zach Collins. And Portland says, well, I'd like to get Kevin Love back, so let's try and work a deal with the Cavs where they maybe exchange picks or put something into it to where the Cavs are getting expiring deals, picks, and, you know, move in the direction they want to go, which none of us know.
I will be the Zach Lover of this conversation. I appreciate Zach Collins. I think that he has a lot of potential. He's only, 20 years old? 21?
He's young.
Just 21. Just turned 21.
Absolutely young.
So he's very, very raw and young, and I like where his ceiling is and his athleticism. But you guys are right, because remember, Myers Leonard had a great series against Memphis?
Yep.
And everybody's like, hey, Myers is going to be the guy.
seen that before.
Big man,
guys.
Social big media. Man is,
yeah,
is
I know.
So, it's so tough.
But
to
I think
see.
Zach is already better than what Myers was.
Absolutely.
So,
I would agree with that.
I like that.
And he's young, and you're right. But
veterans win in this league. Veterans guys that are experienced win in this league. It's young play. Look at the Pelicans. Oh, it's a great young roster. Fantastic. In 20 years,
That's just hurt.
Well, Zion's not the only young player on that roster. I get it. Is he the foundation of it? Maybe.
Yeah.
You need veterans here. Guys that get, like Kevin Love, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think oftentimes we overvalue potential. And that goes through draft picks. That goes through players. Everything of the sort. And then I think, unfortunately, you have this price tag in your mind of what Zach Collins is worth based on what you paid for him initially, which is two draft picks in a draft class that was loaded. And now that is the expectation to get in return. And unfortunately, I just don't think you get that. And at least right now. Now, maybe he turns into that player or maybe beyond. Maybe he's CJ McCollum and it takes him 3 or 4 years and, you know, whatever. But I think in this league, with star players, you have to make them happy and you have to make it as possible to win now as you can. And I think with this roster, in this situation, you have to go all in. You have Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum on long-term contracts.
No more development time.
And you're mediocre right now, unfortunately.
And
I hate to say
it. Yeah. Banged up and mediocre.
You have to do something, right? I mean, to me,
this is
over and over and over. And unfortunately, until Neil Olshey says, I'm willing to deal guys, and we don't know. Maybe he's making phone calls and trying to get things. But I think the issue really is where Portland values guys and where the league values those players.
All right, Oliver, thank you so much. I'm getting yelled at. I know you need to go, so thank you for sticking around with us. Oliver Maroney works with the Big Three. Follow him on Twitter at @OMaroneyBig3. Always appreciate your time. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.